When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, everybody, welcome to a brand new MMA Roasted podcast. It's me, Adam Hunter. We have the legend, Kenny Florian, in studio. And when I say legend, I mean it. I really mean it. As well as Tyler Bowe. I want to thank our sponsors first. Decipher, it's a lifestyle firm designed to help you reach your full potential through personal coaching. People, everyone needs a personal coach. Everyone can benefit from feedback and an outside perspective. Decipher is bringing true, affordable personal coaching to everybody. Take the first steps towards success. Call them today at 1-888-731-COACH and book your free coaching session. That's 1-888-731-2622. Fighters, when I say everyone needs a coach, I meant everybody. Decipher, D-I-Cypher, has helped fighters learn how to pull the trigger in fights, how to deal with octagon jitters, and even help fighters set themselves up for success after fighting and much, much more. So call them, you get a free session. And if you actually book more sessions, you get 10% off if you use the code ROASTED. That's di-cypher.com, 1-888-731-2622. Also, tip a fighter. Look, fighters are underpaid. How many times talk to fighters? They're working three jobs. They're personal trainers. They're tow truck drivers. Who knows what else they're doing, okay? Well, we can make a difference by giving the fighters money directly. Tip a fighter. You like the way a fighter wins you money? You want to reward that guy? You can throw that fighter money. Fighters, you're in there anyway. No reason why you shouldn't be picking up extra cash. So go to tipafighter.com at tipafighter. Listen, we got to get these fighters more money. The more money they have, better camps they have, the happier they are. Everyone's happier. So throw these guys money. It could be 10 bucks, could be 20 bucks, could be $100. Give the guy 1,000 bucks. I tell you, if Holly Holm was with Tip a Fighter, she'd be a millionaire right now. So also, American Icon Autographs, AIASE.com, the best sports and celebrity memorabilia and events, signed collectibles from the UFC, WWE, baseball, football, movies, everything else in between. Past signings have included Mike Tyson, Fedor, Sakuraba, Rampage, Big Nog, Hoist Gracie, Marlus Conan, and more. Check out their website. Find out who's signing next. Go to check out their events. Meet the celebrities. Build your man cave. AIASE.com. The guy Sean is a great, great guy. Also, next week, I will be performing at the Stratosphere, the LA Comedy Club, Tuesday through Sunday. Come check me out. Me, I'm having a good week. I've been filming my TV show. It's me, D-Ray Davis. If you know D-Ray, Michael Blackson, Brandon T. Jackson, Lavelle Crawford. It's a great show. I can't say what network it's on yet, okay, but I can tell you those people are involved, as well as Eric Rivera. And it's been a blast. Although I have to say, when you're around guys like D-Ray or Lavelle, and they're talking about the money they make on the road, I feel like a complete loser. I was feeling really good until they were like, yeah, I just did a door deal and walked away with X amount of money. And I'm like, Jesus, I got to get my shit together.
It's crazy when you can. I know some guys, one of my buddies opens for D-Ray all the time, and he makes better money opening for D-Ray than a lot of guys do closing clubs.
It's amazing. Right? I mean, it's amazing how good you could feel to get to at certain levels. Like when I did the first time I did the Tonight Show, I was on with Bill Maher, and Bill Maher went on, then I went on, and I'm making Bill Maher and Leno laugh, and I'm like, it's probably like the highest I've ever felt as a comic. And then afterwards, Bill Maher's like, oh, you're really funny. I go, thanks for laughing, Bill Maher, because he was laughing at my jokes. He goes, laughter's not voluntary. I go, hey, man, do you still love doing comedy? He's like, well, I wouldn't do it if I didn't love it. Yeah. He goes, it's a lot easier when you have your own jet.
Yeah.
And at that point, I was like, I'm sitting there between Leno and Bill Maher. And then he goes, Jay, when was the last time you flew a commercial? He's like, I think China. And I'm like, man, I this is not a conversation that I really feel.
Yeah.
Like that's, you know, I was trying to like, this is just, there's certain times that just remind you how low on the totem pole you are.
Well, those guys are like the top 1% of the...
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but but you do Leno, you're like, oh, this is it. And then the guy says it's easier when you have your own jet. And then But yeah, so what little else things going on? Also, we wrestling season started again. It's the second semester. Yeah. And we have a girl on the team, Lauren. Kids are funny. I was actually, because these kids refuse to wear headgear in practice. And I tell them, guys, wear your headgear. I have cauliflower ear. This is after surgery. You don't want to get cauliflower ear. And one kid's like, I heard that kids give themselves cauliflower to spook out their opponents. I'm like, no, that doesn't happen. But thank you.
Dude. If I could go back in time, I would not wear headgear because then I'd have some badass looking ears.
Really?
I would.
Dude, when I was in high school, having cauliflower was not cool. This was in, like, of course, the 80s or 90s. But I remember having a purple ear. It would turn purple. And the only chicks that liked it were gothic girls. Dude, who liked The Cure.
I remember when I was in Brazil, there were a few Americans that were over there at the time. And I walked into the bathroom and, you know, you'd think, oh, like, like, it was almost like catching a dude masturbating. I caught a dude with his belt, and it was around his ears, and he was grinding it on his ears, trying to, like...
He was trying to give himself...
To get cauliflower for that reason, because it looks tough, you look cool. Yeah. You know, you're like an official badass. You got
Couldn't he just roll in jiu-jitsu?
I know, I don't get it, dude. It was crazy.
Trying
to speed
up the process.
It was bad, yeah, so we all made fun of him.
I was already pretty uncool, so I would have put up with the ears just, like...
Oh, just go full
long, out. Long-term goal.
Just go all out.
Yeah, I'll look cooler later.
And Tyler, how are you doing? What's going on with you?
I'm good. I've been working on a ton of writing stuff and trying to submit for a couple shows. And I'm going to be in Junior's Comedy Club in Valencia this weekend, Friday and Saturday. A couple of shows. And
I think once you get on that one late show... Like, once you get on the Fallon, they're going to have you back 100 times because you have a perfect style for that. You just haven't broken in that one time, you know?
Yeah, just waiting for that break.
You should go out for America's Got Talent. You have a great style for that, too.
I did audition for AGT.
And what happened?
You get 90 seconds, dude, and it is hard to impress people with words in 90 seconds when the dude before you just, like, rode a unicycle and swallowed flaming swords.
I'm
going to stand here and talk.
That's a good point. It's a good point. By the way, our wrestling team needs a sponsor. It's only a couple $100. You get your name on the jersey, so if you're out there listening, you could sponsor our team. You could have your company in the back of the uniform.
He's talking to you, Bill Maher.
Now, yeah. Kenny Florian, I was going over your fights last night. I was like, because I called you yesterday, could you do the show? You said yes. By the way, thank you so much. It is so I'm so humbled to have a guy like you.
Thank you for forcing me to be here.
No problem, man. Yes. No problem. I like guilt you in. I have pictures of you in some unconventional things.
I have to be here.
Now, but yeah, you're killing it as an announcer so well that you're almost too good where you forget how much of a beast you were. And you were like a straight up killer. I remember my dad meeting you at the comedy show. Uh-huh. And I'm like, Dad, this guy, he was like, he fought for the title 5 times. That guy? I know he looks like a fucking hipster, but this dude will fucking kill you. But yeah, man. By the way, as an announcer, do you ever get fighters that get angry with you at how you're announcing their fight?
A lot. And it's something now that I've kind of been a little bit more further removed from the sport, I feel more comfortable doing it. But it's my... Dude, I hate doing it. You know, when I was doing stuff for ESPN back in the day, when I first started, they used to call me K-Swiss because I was like, you know, Switzerland. I would never give a pick. I'd be like, well, this guy's great, but the other guy's great. And I don't know who's going to win. I used to hate making picks because, I know a lot of these guys, and people get offended. I remember I used to kind of get a little offended. I'd hear a prediction, and they'd be like, Florian's going to get his ass kicked. And I'd be like, well, I did get my ass kicked, but it still sucks that I heard. You know, you get offended. And I was very conscious of that. Now that I'm a little further removed, I try not to worry about that stuff because that takes away from
You're
my commentary.
Picking,
you know,
or commentating?
Both. So whether it's picking or doing commentating, I try to be very conscious of it and just like not worry about it. But then people still be like, oh, Florian, you were biased and you said this.
What instance exactly did you have a fight?
So let's say, for example, any fight that I'm calling, you know, if someone's getting hit in the face more than the other guy, I'm not being biased. I'm just calling it the way I see it. And sometimes, you know, the angles that you have at the cage or the angles that you have on certain camera angles that you have on the monitors are different than what the fans are seeing. And, you know, I don't know. And then fighters sometimes, you know, they'll say certain stuff. Like Beneil Dariush, when he fought Michael Johnson, I thought it was a terrible decision. I thought Michael Johnson clearly won the fight, and Beneil Dariush got the decision. And I like Beneil Dariush. I have nothing against him. I know him just as well as Michael
Iranian.
Johnson.
They're very proud people.
Yeah, and he's a great fighter, man. He's a great fighter, and I thought he lost, and everyone thought he lost as well. And he did some interviews saying that, you know, Florian was biased. I think he knows Rashad, who trains Michael Johnson, and that's why he thought it. But the reality is, you know, it was a bad decision. I mean,
guys ever come up to you and say, hey, man, have you ever gotten in your face or no?
No. I remember I had a little, when I was working for ESPN back in the day, again, Josh Barnett had some words for me on MMA.TV. And he's a big, scary dude,
yeah, he's
man.
Huge.
And I didn't want him angry at me. But I said something to the effect of, he beat Gilbert Ivel. And I said, you know, I expected Barnett to be even more dominant. I said, I've never seen a guy get mounted on someone and get hit more than, you know what I mean?
Like, right.
Gilbert Ivel was hitting him a lot, and yeah, he was mounted on him. And I said something to that effect, and he got really pissed off. And
but it's funny, though, because like I would say, like if I made the pick, people are like, who the fuck have you ever fought? What have you ever done? You're a comedian. I could always say I'm a comedian. But you, I mean, you've been in there. So right. I would think you have. But in a way, maybe people look at you more as a colleague than a commentator.
Yeah.
So they feel like they can get mad at you in some way.
It'd be like having a fellow comedian be like, you know,
critique your, and you're like, wait, what yeah. about you? Like, I've seen yeah. your
Adam sucks.
Yeah,
exactly. And it's like, so it's tough. It'd be like you'd be a professional critiquer of comedy, and you repeatedly have to.
I can't do it.
Your,
I honestly, like,
it's
even
tough.
I've been asked to coach to judge people.
Right.
I've been asked to judge contests. I've been asked to teach classes. I'm like, no, I say no because
yeah, right.
I first of all, I'm like, who the fuck am I? I don't want to all of a sudden judge somebody else.
Right.
But also, it's a lot. I think comedy more subjective. I mean, you yeah. could watch Sam Kinison. You don't know Sam Kinison. You'd be like horrified at this.
Sure.
Meanwhile, he's one of the greatest comics of all time. Same with, you know, guys like Andy Kaufman.
Yeah.
And people are doing things that you may not even know how
right.
good it is if you're a conventional judge. So,
sure.
Fighting, it's a little more, you know, black or white, I believe.
Yeah. And for TV, you know, they want you to give bold predictions. They want you to, you know, give strong opinions, so it's a hard thing to do.
But you
it
do
was
a great,
hard.
You do a great job,
there.
Though. You do a great job also.
Thanks.
As far as like breaking down the technique of what people should do. I think that's something that like I could go, yeah, he should punch him more or something.
Right.
Right. But I mean, but he gets in certain jiu-jitsu moves, and I'm like, I don't know what the fuck. I don't know how he should escape that.
Right.
I think there's only a select people that actually know what the hell they're talking about.
Mm-hmm. It's a tough thing, man, because there's a lot of guys who may not know the sport. Then there's a lot of guys who know the sport but can't communicate it. And then there's a lot of guys who know the sport, can communicate it, but can't do it within those few seconds that you have. So it happens so quickly. So it's something that I'm still learning a lot about and still trying to get
Well, you do a good job. You do a really good job. Now, you recently got married to one of the hottest women I've ever seen in my life.
No, stop.
She brought her to the comedy show. When I say this girl's a model, she was like on Top Model. She was like, she was my agent was there, my gay commercial agent. And it was so funny because him and his boyfriend were there, and they were more flipping at it. They didn't know who Kenny was. They were like, who the fuck is this guy? This weird guy with the beard. But Clark was there, his wife, and they were, oh my god, it's you. You have now. How do you now? I had heard from a long time that you got some of the hottest women around, and I was like, and I know the name. I'm not gonna name names out of respect to my face, okay? But you do have you had a reputation. Now you don't seem as this like ladies' man.
No, I'm not a good looking guy at all. I look at pictures of myself. I'm like, what the hell? What happened to me? It's
how
disgusting.
How are you getting these supermodels?
How do I get these?
It's the ears.
It does. It really. Yeah. It's my right cauliflower ear that gets them, reels them in. I don't know, man. You know, it's like, I think anybody can do it.
You're so full of shit.
No, I'm serious. If you just have balls and you like, dude, you know how to make people laugh. If you can make people laugh, that's like 80% of it.
Well, I'm not talking about me and my other people listening to this. But I'm saying like, okay, so how did you pick up Clark Gilmer?
Right.
How did you pick her up?
I just, you know, we actually worked together when I retired. I was doing a photo shoot and, you know, they made it look like I was like this ladies' man and I had like all these girls around me and she was one of the girls and she wasn't even going to take the job. She was like, this job doesn't pay much, but like whatever, I have nothing going on, I guess I'll go. So she went last minute and that's how we met. I asked her out. She said no. And then,
really?
Yeah. She's like, no, I'm watching the Olympics, the opening ceremony of the Olympics. I'm like, okay, cool. Like, that's the most boring thing of the Olympics.
Right.
And you want to hang out and do, and you don't want to hang out.
Is that what you said back
there? Yeah, no, I didn't. But I was like, really? The opening ceremony of the Olympics? Cool. And then, yeah. And then I asked her out again later that night. I'm like, hey, we're here if you want to come out, if your opening ceremony is
done.
You
asked her twice out in one
yeah,
night.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So then I was like, well, whatever. She was like, no response. And then the next day, she hit me up. She's like, hey, sorry, you know, I didn't get back to you. She's like, there's this party going on the beach. Like a bunch of like
model
friends are going to be there if you want to go hang out. So I was like, okay, she's throwing me a bone. She's with someone. She's like inviting me out is because she feels sorry for me.
Right.
So then I went out and
went by yourself?
Her. Yeah, I went out and met her and yeah, she wasn't with anybody. So we were just kind of hitting on. I think she was probably trying to get a feel for me and right. like what I was like, make sure I wasn't creep.
Did she know who you were at all?
No.
Okay.
No. So that was cool, too. I like that. I don't like when, like, I always feel a little weird when girls come up to me and
right.
they know who I am.
Now, how long did it take for you to get in her pants?
It wasn't immediate. It wasn't immediate.
You waited, like, third date?
It wasn't immediate. I'll say that.
A supermodel like that, you want to hold off, but you don't want to be friend zoned. Like it's almost like you have to sleep with her just because
you got
to
go from rejection to pity and then make your move.
Right, yes. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I got like a third date a month.
I don't know. I don't remember. I don't. No, I cannot so, recall. I
you
cannot
exactly
recall.
Remember the first time that you were.
I cannot recall.
Now, and you also have to do a good job because if you don't last very long, if you don't make her orgasm, you're not getting a callback, right?
No, you're not.
So, was there pressure?
I mean, I guess. I mean, I don't know. I try not to worry about that. So if you worry about it, then you're like, you're in trouble. You know
I worry
mean?
About it all the time. Are you kidding me?
Kenny Florian is a finisher. I'm sure he got
right.
the job done.
I hooked
done.
Up with this Mexican chick about a month ago, and it was like the third time I slept with her that night or something. I was like, I was on a roll.
Yeah. Three times.
Yeah. I went three times. It was like before the show, before twice, then after the show, you know? And I was comfortable, you know? Yeah. First time you want to get a call back, and then you get comfortable. So I was like, call me puppy, right? But then I realized, her dad was like an alcoholic. So I was like, I quickly just, like in my head, was like, call me puppy that you wish you had, you know? Yeah, like, right.
Yeah. Or Adam's fine.
You're non-alcoholic puppy, yes.
Call
yeah,
me,
exactly.
call me, yeah, right. So it took you about a month, all right, so a month in. Now, the first time, did you go twice in one night or three times?
Oh man, geez. I don't know. I don't remember, dude. This is a while ago.
Come on.
I try to go as many as I can. I try to be
still,
as impressive as
now that
possible.
You're married, you still try to? Or you?
I try. It doesn't happen as often.
You go once?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
A lot of IOUs?
Yeah, I guess.
Wow. All
I
right.
Guess, yeah.
Okay, I mean, now... Yeah. Now that's okay. So you got now, but before that though, there was rumors about you with some of the hottest chicks. How did you get those girls?
I don't know, man. I don't think I got the hottest girls, to be honest. I mean, I'd get girls, but like I think it's just I used to go out. You know, I'd go out and try to flirt and just have a good time.
Do you think it's you being a college soccer player? And
they know who I was. Like if I'm on the street and I'm a regular dude, I'm not going to get – it's not impressive. I'm like, hi, I'm regular office guy, yeah. Kenny Florian. You know what I mean? So, like, people be like, oh, he fought? Oh, he fought professionally? Oh, he beat some guys? Oh, he's on TV? You know, like, those things
that,
obviously
that help
to, like, get your foot in the door.
Yeah.
Maybe not your foot.
Did you ever,
yeah. Yeah.
So, like, it helps out maybe if you got, like, a buddy to, like, talk you up if they – is it weird
kinda.
To you if people don't know who you are or if they do know who you are?
See, honestly, I prefer that they don't know. Because then I like, oh, I feel like I was the one who like reeled him in. You know what I mean?
Right,
but,
right.
You know, when you're going out and you're fighting, and especially in Vegas or after one of your fights, people are going to know who you are. And that's how they would come up. Hey, great fight, blah, blah, blah. And, hey, let me introduce you to this person. Let me introduce you to that person. And that's how
it. Now, I heard that you and Clark moved into a $5 million house.
It's not a $5 million
house.
That's
the word on the street.
No, no, No. It was an expensive house.
A $4 million house?
No, less.
Three.
$2 million. Is this LA or Boston?
LA.
Okay, so $5 million. That's like a 2-bedroom.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's like a shack behind it.
Exactly.
I saw the house. It's a ridiculous house.
Thanks.
Are you drug dealing on the side or something? Like, did you save?
I tried.
You saved all your money.
I tried to, man. I saved my money. I invested in different things. I have
Apple?
You know, I own part owner of Apple. Me and Mark Zuckerberg, we started this little company called Facebook.
You may have heard of it.
I don't know if you heard of it. Some people are using it now. I try to save my money, man. I tried to be smart with it. I made some decent investments and, I have a gym back in Boston. I just try to like,
you have a drug cartel in Peru?
I ship very good cocaine from Peru.
Nice.
The best.
That's good.
It really is good quality.
Now, some of the fights coming up are guys that you fought.
Yeah.
McGregor, Aldo.
Yes.
Aldo, very close fight you fought with him. You came down to 145. A lot of people didn't know if you were going to have flies around you.
Right. It was bad, dude.
But it was a good fight.
It was a decent fight. I felt like shit because it was the most difficult weight cut I've ever had to deal with. I hit 146 for Diego Nunes prior to that fight, his teammate, and then had to hit 145 on the dot, and it just, that last pound and a half just could not come off, dude. I must have been in the sauna. I think there was five other Greg Jackson fighters that started before me. Like, I think started before me, and I finished after the last guy. So there was like a ton of guys that were in and out of the sauna. I was trying to cut weight.
You almost break?
And it was close. It was very, very close. But in my mind, I was like, I'm not going to be that guy who doesn't make the weight for the championship fight. I had to do it. And I did. It was brutal. And when I was warming up for that fight, my legs were literally cramping up. So I could only do like a 3-minute warm up.
Where did you walk into the fight at?
I think for that fight, I was probably 160, I think it was 164,
so you gained 19 pounds, bang, like that.
163, 164.
So who do you like in the McGregor Aldo?
Dude, this is a tough fight, man. I don't want to make a prediction yet because, I got to give my prediction eventually. It's not because I'm afraid to give a prediction. Yeah. I'm going to give it in a couple weeks or I guess next week, but I don't want to give it away yet, but I will say this, is that Conor McGregor's style is not going to be an easy one for Aldo. You know, because I compare myself. I was the only other southpaw that fought Aldo in the last 5 years. And I was tall and I was rangy and I was a decent striker. I don't think I was an amazing striker. And Conor McGregor is an amazing striker. He's a special striker who could fight forward. He can fight going backwards. He's unbelievable countering. I think what Conor is also going to be surprised with is the insane speed of Jose Aldo. I remember when it's frightening how fast he is. You know, you get hit and then you realize he hit you. You don't even see it coming. He's that freaking quick. It's impressive,
fast
man. And he's strong. Fastest guy by far I've ever fought. And maybe one of the strongest too. When you tie up with him, you're like, what?
When you fought guys at 170.
Yeah. He's freakishly strong, man.
You fought 85, right?
I fought 85, as high as 85.
And so the 145 pounder is stronger than 85 pounder?
He felt like steel. When you lock up, when I was trying to take him down, when you lock up with him up against the cage, he is extremely strong. And it was good to hear because
pissed him off?
Yeah. And that can be an advantage too because, you know, he's been talking about Jose Aldo for like over a year now, getting inside his head. And Aldo has to make sure that he doesn't get too emotional during that fight.
I can't wait for this fight.
It's insane. It's
now, Wyman versus Rockhold.
That's another one, man. Very, very tough one.
I'm not going to give you a prediction on that.
You know what? Listen, I'll give you a prediction on Wyman Rockhold. Okay. I will. I think Wyman, until proven otherwise, you know, I don't think he's going to be beaten anytime soon. Now, I think his style is such that he does take damage. So he doesn't want to be that fighter, that style of fighter for too long. Because as we know, you know, your chin eventually goes. And Chris does get hit. He has gotten hit.
Your
we saw in his
went.
Last fight. What's that?
Your chin never
well,
went.
I didn't get hit that much. I tried not to, you know, but Weidman's a hard-nosed fighter, man. He puts his face first sometimes, and he ends up coming out of it. But he's just tough as nails, dude. He's his wrestling, I think, is going to be an edge against Rockhold. I don't think Rockhold's going to be able to tap him. I think Rockhold is the more technical stand-up fighter, and I also think he's not going to be an easy guy to take down. But I think Weidman's pressure, his ability to take shots and fire right back, and I think he hits a little harder than Rockhold. I think Rockhold's more of a technical striker. I think Weidman probably punches harder than Rockhold.
I'm hoping, I used to be the biggest Chris Weidman supporter because we had him on the show before he became famous, and I'm like, hey, man, when you become famous, don't forget us. And he said, oh, I'll never forget you. And then he came on the show and came on the show.
He forgot you.
And he totally forgot me.
Yeah.
Whereas Rockhold still comes on the show.
Right,
I call
cool.
him, he comes on. So I got to go for Rockhold now.
That's
although
cool.
I like Chris. I like Chris as a person. He has got severe ADHD. Like if you'd ever talk to him, he's like a child. I mean, I don't know if I'm not diagnosing him, but the times I've interacted with him, it's like I'm talking to like a little kid.
Weidman. Yeah. I could see that. Yeah. Sure.
And he's funny. But he seems like the kind of guy that whatever is in front of his face is what he's focused on, which I understand that. But that's probably why he definitely has a very childish demeanor to him.
Yeah.
And he's a super sweet guy. He happens to be a real nice guy. And he's probably like his wife got mad at him for coming on the podcast because I asked him how much pussy got in Hofstra or something. and his wife did say to me, I'm not allowing him.
Oh,
back
so that's why he's not on the show.
So maybe that's why he's not.
You screwed it up.
I screwed it up. Yes. But I happen to like Weidman. I like Weidman, but Rockhold's been super cool. And I don't know. I mean,
that guy gets chicks. You think I get chicks, dude? He's like him and Uriah Faber are probably the most prolific.
I've heard stories about Rockhold, and I've asked him about it. I go, there was a celebrity he slept with. I'm not going to say celebrity, where he had sex with this woman in front of all her friends, and they instructed him on what to do. And
I heard about this.
And I went up to him.
I did. I heard about
it. And I go, did you have sex with X amounts, I'm not going to say, XYZ in front of all our friends? And he goes, no, not all our friends. And I was like, this dude is the man.
Yeah. He gets chicks, dude.
That dude would get chicks if he worked at a Chipotle, though.
Yeah. He's a good looking prick. He's a good looking prick. He is. I mean, yeah.
He doesn't need the fighter angle. Like that dude.
Yeah.
There's no doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I you know what? My only thing about Rockhold is he has one loss, and that was to an alien. When he fought Vitor Belfort,
that was superhero Vitor Belfort.
Yeah, that was not the same Vitor Belfort that we've been seeing.
Right.
So
it was his UFC debut
in Brazil.
In Brazil.
So
there's a lot of the cards were stacked against him,
and he got kicked once and fell down. Whereas like he didn't take a 5-round beating. Like I remember asking Freddie Roach one time. I said. I go, Freddie, blah, blah, blah. He goes, a lot of times guys are doing you a favor by knocking you out early because you're not taking the beatings.
Right.
That's what really, like a guy like Diego Sanchez, a guy that you fought, Diego Sanchez.
Yeah.
I love Diego. We've had him on the show.
Yeah.
Super cool guy.
Yes.
I think it may be time for him to hang it up.
Yeah, man. It sucks. I hate seeing guys like a Diego Sanchez who is such a game fighter, man. He's been in so many freaking wars where it's like, I don't want to see him get hit again. And he's too tough for his own good where you know he's not going to tap. I mean, his leg was like hanging on last night. It was crazy. He kept getting nailed in the leg. He was limping. He could barely walk. He's been getting hit in the head, you know, throughout the whole fight, and he just would not quit. And those... exactly what Freddie said. Those are the fights that really do damage. It's not that one shot that takes you out. It's the shots prior to that. It's the shots that added up, the fights before. It's the sparring before. And Diego has been in a lot of wars, man.
So whose responsibility do you think it is? Is it the UFC to say, sorry, man, even though you draw,
Well, the UFC does that. I mean, the UFC many times intervenes and requires that a fighter will get a head scan, MRI scan, and make sure that they are healthy enough to fight if they want to continue fighting. And they will always recommend, hey, listen, like you've been in a lot of fights. Why don't you think about hanging it up? And if they say, no, I want to keep fighting, they'll say, okay, well, you have to get medically cleared before you're able to fight again. And at the end of the day, like I think the people around him, his coaches and managers, they're the ones that really have to do the convincing. Because the last thing a fighter is going to do is admit that they can no longer fight at a certain level. It's a tough thing. It's a tough pill to swallow.
I mean, how did you? But your last fight was against who?
My last fight was against Jose Aldo.
I mean, now you lost to a guy who was at the highest level. Mm-hmm. You went five rounds. Mm-hmm. Okay, you won. I would say two of the rounds.
Thank you.
So you can fight at the highest level, but you still walked away.
Yeah, well, mine was a little different because I was actually training for. I was in training camp. I was fighting. I was training hard, and I had hurt my back, and my back just never was the same for
was
a couple years.
Like with so Clark, is that how you?
Yeah, I wish. Yeah, no, that wasn't the case. This is before Clark, and I couldn't train the way I was. And I always said, if training was no longer fun, if I was no longer capable of being physically better than I was in my previous fight, then I knew it was time.
Do
to
you watch
up.
Fights now though, thinking I could beat this guy?
The competitor in me, yeah, yes. If I'm being honest, yes.
And then, and how tempting is it for you to go, you know what, I could probably make $100,000, $150,000.
There's a number in my head that's much higher than that, but there's a number in my head that if they ever offer. But I'm 39 years old. Who the hell wants to see a 39-year-old Kenny Florian back in the cage?
Hands up.
But you know what I mean? But I do feel, in my head, I feel like I'm a lot more knowledgeable and a lot better as a fighter overall than I was when I was fighting. Because I do continue to fight. I do continue to train. I do look at my past fights and be like, wow, I sucked, and try to improve those things. And
what
you know,
fights did you suck in?
I think every one of them. I hate watching my fights, dude. I really do. I hate it. I hate it.
You honestly think? Are you just saying you're being like overly critical? Because
I'm very critical. I'm hard on myself. That was a good thing about me, and it's also a bad thing about me because I was very. I think to be a perfectionist is a good thing, but it's also can be very.
You're never happy.
It hinders you too because now you're always kind of analyzing yourself.
I like that with comedy too. Like,
you know what I mean?
How good of a set it was. I'm like, did I try new jokes? No.
Right.
Did I really get as deep as I could?
Yeah.
No. It's just. I think that's what makes you great. But at the same time, and also my fear is that like right now I'm making more money than I've ever made, which is not a lot of money. I mean, if you woke up with my money, you'd probably jump through the fucking window. Okay. But like as Chris Rock said, you know, if Oprah walked up, Bill Gates walked up with Oprah's money, he jumped through the window. Okay. But however, there's always that like, okay, how can I sustain this now?
Right.
Do you have that issue of like, you have a great fight, but then you're like, okay, but how can I keep this up?
Yeah. I think the main thing is that you have to constantly challenge yourself. And I think the worst thing you could do and be in life is comfortable.
Yeah.
Because now you don't have that edge. So you have to constantly be pushing yourself to be like, okay, that's cool. That was yesterday. What am I doing now? And what am I even doing like in the present right now? How am I thinking? What is my mentality? Because as soon as you become like comfortable or content in a certain way, you're screwing yourself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's when you become complacent. And being complacent
is
the worst
place to be. I mean, you probably have
enough
money to retire right now, right? You probably have enough money to retire.
I'm okay, but I'm still pushing myself. And that's in a way like, you know, getting a stupid expensive house or whatever. That's kind of my way of being like, okay, shit, now I got to like work even harder. Now I got to work, you know, in a weird way.
Now's the time to transition into your professional soccer career.
Yes, exactly.
By the way, I mean, you played D1
Real Madrid,
soccer,
here I come. Yes.
And how close were you to going pro?
You know what? Realistically, probably not. And this is one of the reasons why I worked my ass off in mixed martial arts is that in soccer, I was more physically gifted than I was for fighting. I felt like I had more of a knack playing soccer than I was for anything else. However, I didn't work hard. Everyone else was always working. And I always like, I could have been the guy who always like, I didn't study for the test. Oh, I got an A. Right. I was like that for soccer for a while until like in my late teens, all these guys that I was better than all of a sudden just started surpassing me. And that was a bummer for me. And I couldn't figure it out. I was like, what the hell? Why is I'm not good anymore, I guess. Or these guys, much as got a lot better, I didn't figure out that, yes, okay, I was talented for soccer, but I still have to work my ass off. They were going to camps and they were just running in the off season. I was kind of bullshitting in the off season.
I hated soccer. I was like, I made varsity as a freshman and I got progressively worse every year to the point where all the JV kids got better than me. So I just, fuck it. I played football as a senior year.
Right.
You had to play a sport. I need to get stronger for wrestling. But the worst was I was like, my team won like the main state prep school thing.
Yeah.
And I didn't play a 1 minute. And I had to cheer with everybody. Like, we won! And there's nothing worse than cheering knowing you did absolutely fucking nothing. I had to fake be happy for the team.
Right.
I was happy, kind of, but like everyone was flipping out. Like, and I did absolutely fucking nothing. I did nothing.
That's funny.
Now, you were in Korea, right?
Yeah, just in Korea.
Did the UFC, did they give you a couple days to kind of walk around Korea and see
I did,
Korea?
Yeah. So I got, yeah, I had an opportunity to walk around a little bit. It was an awesome city, man. Really cool, very modern. A lot of cool things to see, a lot of great restaurants.
Did Clark go with you?
She did. She
oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you ever go to Brazil without her?
Yes. Actually, that was the first trip, I think, for like commentary-wise, internationally, that she's traveled with me.
She must have been a giant there.
What's that? She was pretty. She was getting some. She, I think, was like maybe the only blonde in the country. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've been to Korea before. I did comedy for the troops in
Seoul,
Ulsan, and Busan. It was great. Now, I remember being on the road a lot of times. You don't get to see your girlfriend, so we would have Skype sex, where you have sex via Skype, which was
how does that work?
How does that work?
How does that work?
You don't do that?
No, I mean
you don't have FaceTime sex with your really?
Mean, that's kind of hard. I don't know. I never have.
Well, it sucks. There's a box where you could see yourself jerking off, and you have to like literally cover up that fucking box,
right?
Because there's nothing that's gonna like make you go limp more than seeing
you're
your
seeing yourself
flabby
right.
gut with your fucking jerking. Oh, it's horrible. But like
sort of feels like a three-way with two guys that
right?
look like
your
twin brother.
It does right. like a three-way. And then I used to do funny things where I would like put my penis up to the thing and then start like making like playing like the whole like, hey, what's going on?
Oh, that's
and
too
then,
much.
And then the girl, my ex was like, I just went totally dry because of you. Thank you, please. My
oh man,
it's like a desert down there now because
that's
of my
hilarious.
My fucking puppet show that I did. But so you don't have any Skype sex?
No, man. I haven't partaken in that.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I just wait.
You just wait. You just totally. Now when you wait, I mean, sometimes you're away for like a week, right?
Less. Yeah, and usually it's just like 4 days, 4 or 5 days.
Well, you go home. I mean, your girlfriend, is she just like, does she have the flowers on the bed and the lingerie? I mean, does she get all oiled up?
See, this is what you imagine, but no, not really, man. Like, we have our occasions, you know what I mean? We have like our Valentine's Day or our anniversary.
You're so romantic.
Like
wow, Valentine's Day.
You know
wow,
what I mean?
All right.
But like, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? Holidays and stuff like that. You
all
know?
Right, all right. Now, Edgar versus Mendez, who you like?
Yeah. You know what? I gave my prediction yesterday. I'm going to go with Edgar. It's hard to go against Edgar, man. I mean, Chad Mendes is a phenomenal fighter. He's a beast. But Frankie Edgar, he's one of the more consistent guys in the UFC. And he's smart. He can adapt during fights. He was a guy who took big shots against other wrestlers at 155 pounds. Why wouldn't he be able to do it at 145 pounds? And I think this weight class suits him.
What's up?
Who do you like in this fight?
It's a tough pick. I gotta go Edgar too. I think he's been in the cage with the best of the best. I mean, Mendez has too, and Mendez, his performance against Aldo was phenomenal.
Yes.
He went into this fight with McGregor, short notice, everybody talks about that, but I also think, I mean, Edgar's got the movement and he's got the speed, I think, maybe, but I think Mendez has power.
Right.
I mean, Edgar's not the guy that, I mean, Mendez is in there. He dropped a few guys with big shots. I don't know if Edgar's that kind of like power puncher, but I mean his speed, his wrestling, like I'm stoked for this fight. I think it's gonna be fun.
Very similar fighters. Yeah. my fear is that if Edgar lands if Mendez lands a big shot, like like Maynard had Edgar on Wobble Street a couple times, and I'm like, I would say Mendez probably hits as hard as Maynard, right?
Maybe. And maybe even faster. Yeah.
So however, I don't want to, I mean, I feel like Edgar got screwed in that first fight by not getting the title shot.
Right.
And I don't know. I was at the Mendez after party after he lost.
Okay.
You know, and everyone was dancing and he was having a good time. And I think I would have been crying. I don't think I would have showed up.
Oh, dude. I was going to say, any time I lost, I was miserable. I mean, there were times I didn't leave my room. I was depressed. I didn't sleep. I mean, it's the worst feeling ever. And I could never, and it's tough because listen, at the end of the day, Chad Mendes, he made a good amount of
half
money.
$500,000.
Yeah, I mean, $500,000. So that's why. And it was like a 2 week notice. So it'd be like, hey, Adam, in 2 weeks, can I give you $500,000? We got to fight this guy. I'm like, okay, no problem.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and so he was probably happy about that. But yeah, as a fighter, as a competitor, it's tough to get
I think he had to go. He had signed a contract to go.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it did bother him being the competitor he did.
Right.
Although there's just something about like him. I don't know. I wouldn't say like he came in second in the NCAA finals.
Right.
You know.
Right.
And then he came second, I think, in the state of California.
Right.
And then he. I don't know if he's complacent with coming in second. Right. I'm not saying that because I still think the guy could be a champion.
Yes.
And he goes out there and gives his best shot. But I just feel. I feel like. I don't know. Look, I want to be invited to the next after party, so I'm not gonna say shit. But and he had to go, so maybe he just put on that like smiley face on the inside.
You think Frankie's gonna win? Is what you're saying?
I do think Frankie's gonna win. I don't know why.
That was a long way of saying I think Frankie's gonna win.
Now, did you ever have to go to the after parties after you lost?
I did. When I actually Sean Sherk, we were talking about Sean Sherk fight earlier. I had to go out to an after party after that. After I lost. And
what was that like?
It was miserable, dude. And it was so funny because it's a funny story. So I went out and my buddy that was there, he like introduced me to like, I guess there were a bunch of like strippers out that night. Right. So he's like, this is my stripper friends, blah, blah, blah. And he like introduced me to him and I'm talking to one of them. And then one of them left and the other one comes down and sits down on my lap and starts talking. And these two stripper chicks get in a fight while one of them on my lap. I'm bruised up. Yeah. I'm tired and I'm just sitting there and she's taking her shoes off. She has this huge heel and they're literally trying to hit each other in front of me. One's sitting on like smashing the other girl in the face. And I'm just like sitting there. I'm like, this was a night.
I just lost a fight,
championship fight. I just drank a bunch of my
Where
opponent's
was
blood.
In Vegas?
This is in Vegas.
Yeah.
And now I have two strippers that are fighting, literally fighting on top of me.
Now that Sean Sherk fight.
I just laughed. I mean,
which I think maybe that fight was the best thing for you because I think you dropped the weight class after that fight, right?
No. That was at 155. He seemed like he was two weight classes bigger than me. But yeah, that was my first championship fight. And I felt like it was a good fight because it was kind of my coming out party in that like everyone always said, like, he was lucky or he got good fights. And, you know, the UFC set him up with good fights. But going five rounds with a guy like Sean Sherk, I think I had like seven fights or eight fights at the time. And Sean Sherk had like almost 50 fights. And he looked like a He-Man doll. And, we went five hard rounds. I was able to cut him up, and it was a nasty fight.
But your wrestling also got 1,000 times better
since
after
then.
That fight.
Yeah,
I watched. Thanks. You know, for a guy who never wrestled in high school, because I coach middle school wrestling. I love it. Yeah. But I'd always root for the wrestlers.
Would I have made the team prior to that?
100% you made the team.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe.
But we have no cuts. But for a guy who never wrestled, your double leg got astronomically better.
Thanks,
to the point where you. We're taking down Clay Guida, wrestler. Joe Stevenson, I believe, was a high school, maybe even college wrestler. Yeah. There were guys that you were taking down that you had no business taking down.
Right.
You're double. Did you just practice double afterwards?
I did, man. You know, I think I always had pretty good timing, but I didn't really wrestle until late in my career. And I wish I did, man, because it was hard for me, for whatever reason, in Boston just to find good high-level wrestling training partners. And coaching. And finally, after I lost to Gray Maynard in Boston, my brother was like, dude, that's it. You're getting a freaking wrestling coach. Like, you know, you've gone way too long without having formal wrestling. And I got one of the assistant coaches at Boston University. He was an All-American
Carl
at
Adams?
West Virginia. No, well, Carl Adams was the head coach. Yeah, who was phenomenal.
Camp.
And I trained with Sean Gray, who was...
Sean Gray went to Blair Academy.
Yeah.
He wrestled in the same year I did. Sean Gray was a beast.
He was a beast, dude. Yeah. So he helped me so much. One of the nicest... Actually, you remind me of him a lot. You guys are kind of built the same.
I met Sean Gray. He's a nice guy.
Awesome dude. Yeah, awesome dude. And he helped me so much. He really... taught me like the system of wrestling, like of like how to set everything up college style, how to drill, how to get all my, you know, finishes in order. And wrestling that dude in like a hot room every single day was one of the hardest training experiences of my life.
I think he was a four-time high school national champion.
He was an animal, one of the top prospects for a long time. And the reason he went to West Virginia is because one of the Brands brothers was coaching there.
Then he
ended up leaving, and then he, you know, was stuck with the other coach. But Sean was, you know, All-American, should have been a national champ. He was like one point away from, he tore his ACL during the match against one of the Iowa guys. But anyways, phenomenal guy, awesome coach, now an assistant coach at Princeton, doing great things
at
Princeton. Wow.
That's really cool. That's what a small world, but that's but it showed, because I'm like, you know, I feel like maybe even with jiu-jitsu, like there are certain guys that can pull off like a Ben Saunders, what's a go-go platter or
right,
something.
Yeah, yeah.
Or these certain, but I feel like basically you see a lot of like, you know, guillotines, a lot of rear naked chokes, mm-hmm. you know, maybe you'll see some cool leg locks. With wrestling, it's a lot of doubles, singles. There's like five moves
yes.
you need to know for MMA.
Right.
You don't
absolutely.
Need, you know, a switch. You don't need to know some of these, like, you know, 6-point wrestling moves. You know,
yes.
Not just, but, you know what I'm talking about. These like crazy, and same thing with jiu-jitsu a lot of times.
100%. You know, you're so right, because wrestling for MMA is way more simplified. However, and this is one thing that's hard for even the most high-level wrestlers to get, and I sound like I'm trying to be an expert in wrestling when I'm not, but it's the way that they train their wrestling too, because so for regular wrestling, right? You walk up to a guy, you get in your nice low stance, you tie up with the guy, and then you go to your takedowns. In MMA, you can't even get there. It's all from the outside. So it's the style of wrestling that you have, and also your ability to enter in on the legs or to the body clinch from out at a distance. And you have to set it up with strikes. And a lot of wrestlers don't drill that kind of aspect of the reactive takedowns, you know, off of striking, and it's a whole different ball game. And wrestlers be like, oh, I want to improve my wrestling, let me train with another wrestler. No, train on entering against another dude who wants to take you down. Strike with you.
I used to never tie. I used to hate tying up, so I would set up my shots from outside. And I remember thinking when I was like wrestling, like, God, I would like love to be able
your
to
style
punch
been
somebody in the face to set up a shot.
Your style would have been perfect for MMA. Seriously. You know,
I mean, like, for example, like
Jordan Burroughs.
Yeah. Then you look at a guy like who I hate to use him as an example, but a guy like Jake Rosholt. Rosholt, who is 3-time national champion.
Yep.
But he loses to Kendall. I don't know if he beat Kendall Grove, but he was never really achieved wrestling, you know, where he could, and he made the UFC, obviously,
right.
He had a successful career, he beat some guys, but he didn't achieve what you would assume a 3-time national champion
right.
would achieve. Whereas a guy like Rashad Evans, who had a college record of 48-34,
right?
I mean, you look at, he beats certain guys he beat in wrestling, for, like he beats Phil Davis, who's
right.
a national champion, because his wrestling is better suited for MMA. And striking.
Exactly. And I say this for both striking and for wrestling. I was like, don't call it wrestling, call it takedowns. How is his takedown game? Like, is he a takedown artist? GSP wasn't the best wrestler, but he was the best takedown artist.
Right.
And Conor McGregor, maybe not the best kickboxer, but one of the best strikers in the UFC. So I try to like get people to try to change that mentality, because, you know, like, oh, his Muay Thai is really good, his boxing is really good. No, his striking. Call it striking.
That's so
true. It's a whole different game.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's why I remember on The Ultimate Fighter, there's a guy who like spent all his time in like Thailand practicing Muay Thai,
right.
and he got taken down in 30 seconds, and it was over.
It was like, over, yeah.
Great, he had great Muay Thai, but not for MMA.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
Just, so what were you saying?
I was just going to say, with wrestling, I think as far as like translating to MMA, I think it's like, in the same way that like with striking, that, you know, you want to kind of throw punches in bunches. Like, there's people that are great strikers, but they throw one or two strikes at a time.
Yep.
With wrestling, I think it's the guys that chain wrestle that put it together.
That,
you know,
too.
You shoot a single,
absolutely.
It doesn't work, you switch to a double, or you're in a clinch, you drop to a double, but or the scrambles. Like, that's the kind of wrestling that is effective.
And octagon awareness, because if you're up against the cage, you lose your motion as a wrestler. You can't chain wrestle.
Jones.
Yes. So a lot of fighters like Jose Aldo, a master at this, backs up against the cage, digs his feet into the cage, and he's not going anywhere. So you can't use your huge advantage as a wrestler, which is motion.
If you fought BJ Penn and you fought Aldo, who do you think was harder? Like, because those guys both have phenomenal takedowns.
Yes. Like, for me, they were both unbelievable. I think BJ was more balance oriented and more kind of like slick, where Aldo just turned into steel and he was explosive. Like, I don't know if you saw the fight, but I hit a pretty damn good double against him early in the fight. It was like perfect timing, like, yes, got him. Boom. This dude bounced off like he had like I don't know what the hell. Like he jumped on a Swiss ball or something. Just bounced right off the octagon floor, right to his feet. And before I knew it, he was already on his feet. I was like, how
that's
the hell
be
did
so
he do
frustrating. It happens a lot of times with these guys.
Yeah.
By the way, so we're going to talk to, we have a press conference. I got so much more questions for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially your appearance on Dr. Phil.
Oh, man.
We got to talk about that. I watched that last night, and I couldn't believe you, Dana, and Forrest Griffin were on Dr. Phil.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it,
I got to check that out.
Check it out on YouTube. It's fucking hilarious. And by the way, he called you Kenny Florini.
Florini, exactly.
Kenny Florini.
Yeah.
Kenny Florini.
Yeah. You're a professional, Dr. Phil. Thank you.
Kenny, and nobody corrected him.
I know. I was like,
It was great. So anyway, so this guy, Jose Torres, we're talking to him right now. He's 25-1 as an amateur.
Hello.
Hello, is this Jose Torres?
Yes, it is.
You're on the MMA Roasted Podcast. It's me, Adam Hunter. I'm here with the great Kenny Florian and the even better Tyler Bowe. How are you, man?
Pretty good. How about yourself, man?
Good. I was watching some of your fights, man. So I said you were 11-0 last night. You corrected me today. You're 25-1?
Yeah.
As an amateur?
Yeah, I lost my first fight and I went 25 straight.
Nice. Wow. Nice. What? I'm kidding. All right. So now you're from Chicago, but are you Mexican or?
I'm Mexican, Puerto Rican.
Mexican. Wow. Your parents must have had a lot of fights.
Definitely a lot of arguments.
a lot of arguments. Mexican and Puerto Rican. Now, where in Chicago are you training out of?
I train out of Combat Do in Cicero, Illinois.
Nice.
With Master Bob Shermer. So he used to coach Terry Martin and Shoney Carter back in the day.
Oh, nice. Shoney Carter. I used to love watching Shoney Carter fight. Now, you're a great wrestler. You wrestled for Triton College, right?
Yes, I wrestled for Triton College for 2 years and was an All-American, and I wrestled for McKendree University Division II for 3 years.
Nice. Yeah, I watched some of your wrestling highlights last night. You were taking kids up and just throwing, you were body slamming people on their heads in a college wrestling, which was pretty damn cool.
Thanks, man.
Now, are you nervous? You got your big fight coming up in Titan FC, December 18th. It's your first pro fight. They got you up against a good kid from Guam who's got heavy hands. Are you nervous? Are you excited? Take us through what's going through your head.
Given there's always a little nerves in any fight, but I believe this nervousness, you know, always helps me stay prepared in my practice and in my fight. You know, if I'm not nervous, then I'm too cocky, and, you know, that's definitely get knocked out. So being nervous keeps me humble, and I'm definitely having some great practice right now. I'm in San Diego Bad Academy for my training camp with Manolo, Liz Carmouche, and them. So I'm having a great time over here. But Ian Lujan's a great opponent, definitely heavy hands and pretty legit ground game. So it could be a fun fight. But I'm definitely very, very excited for my pro debut. It's been definitely a long time that I've been waiting for this.
How are you paying your rent and like making money right now?
KHK. So Sheikh Khalid bin Hamad Al Khalifa, the Prince or Sheikh of Bahrain, has created his own team with Frankie Edgar on his team, Khabib Nurmagomedov, Islam Makhachev. They pay us monthly to train, so we have the best possibilities of being world champion one day. You know, we don't have to worry about a job and go, oh, man, I'm tired for work. I'm not going to go to training today. I'm going to go tomorrow. So he gives us the best opportunity in the world, pretty much, to be the best fighters we can be.
So, wait, there's a Sheikh in Bahrain that is putting you guys on salary?
Yes, sir.
How much is he paying you a month to train?
A good amount, and pretty much to where I can travel to Bahrain, and I can travel here and just keep on fighting and do what I love to do.
That's amazing. I've been to Bahrain before doing comedy for the military, and they have that really cool karaoke bar with that great Filipino singer. Have you been there?
No, I don't believe so, but I've been to bars down there. It's a good time.
Oh, it's a good time. Kenny, any advice for this young kid?
Man, I think he's got a good head on his shoulders. He's absolutely right. You do want to stay nervous. And the moment you're kind of not nervous anymore, it's like we were talking about before, being too complacent, being too relaxed. You want to use that nervousness as like that energy to kind of drive you during that fight. And man, I wish you the best of luck.
Have you heard of this Bahrain Sheikh? That's
I heard about this team. Yeah, man. I think it's an awesome thing. And that was the big struggle for me as a fighter, was having the money to be able to do what I wanted to do. Because if you're not doing it full time, man, you're at a big disadvantage. And that's the thing, you know, was finding the people who would be able to help you out. You know, I was sleeping on people's couches. I was, you know, barely making it, you know, for a little while, even all the way up until my early part of my career in the UFC, it was still difficult. So now that the sport has become bigger, you have these other people that are genuine fans that want to help out, that are, you know, sponsoring people and, you know.
Now, Jose, awesome. Is this guy from Bahrain giving you guys chicks or no?
No, he's definitely not.
Why not? There's some hot Bahrainian girls. They're not like nothing.
No, so far none. So I have a fiance, so trust me, she'd be pretty pissed about that. Yeah.
I can see that. Now we're gonna call your opponent right now. We're gonna do a Titan FC press conference. These things usually get really heated. We are gonna call Ian Lujan from Guam, who's training in Vegas for the Titan FC press conference. Shorty Jose Torres, right?
Jose Shorty Torres.
Jose Shorty Torres, right here. 25-1 as an amateur, 25 win streak. And I watched your fights, man. You are a scrapper. So
appreciate it. Thank you.
Hello?
Hello. Is this Ian Lujan?
This is Ian Lujan. How's it going, sir?
What's going on? You're on the MMA Roasted Podcast. It's me, Kenny Florian, Tyler Bowe, and your opponent, Jose Torres, on December 18th in Titan FC. How's it going, Ian?
I'm great. Just finished my training session for the morning, and I'm ready to do this interview, man. Thank you. I'm honored to be interviewed by you guys, man.
No
Thank
problem.
You. I'm a big fan of Kenny Florian, by the way, too.
Thank you, man.
Now on Twitter, you got it. Your tweets are protected. You got to make your Twitter. Yeah. This is bullshit. I want to see your tweets, man.
Okay, sir. Yes, of course. You know, I haven't been that active on Twitter. Yeah. Only because I feel like I had a Twitter account when I was in like junior year, and then ever since then I stopped being on Twitter. But you know what? I'm gonna go back on it, man. And I don't know why it is private.
So yeah, fix that because I can't even promote you because no one knows what the hell you're saying. All right,
I will. I need to be promoted, right?
Yes, I gotta promote
sure.
you now.
Yes, sir.
I was watching some of your fights last night. You had a 4-second knockout.
Yes, I did, sir. Yeah.
How do you knock a guy out in 4 seconds?
Man, I don't know that on when I did that, that was just upon instinct, man. It was all controlled instinct, man. I just went out there and I just told myself, hit him as hard as I can. And it's funny because when I look back at the tape, like the following day, I was like, damn, it looked that clean. Like I thought it looked sloppy. I thought like everybody was like, man, you hit him with the cleanest shot. And I was like, what? Like, I thought I hit him so sloppy with the right hand. I just thought I did something crazy. Cause I, you know, when you're fighting, sometimes you don't remember what's going on, you know, you just do it, you know? Right. And then once you finally watch tape, it's like, you go back and look at it and you're like, man, you know, I did that. And it just happened to be a knockout in 4 seconds with just a 1-2. And
now, Kenny, your first fight was 7 seconds, right?
Yeah, I wish. Oh, it was
no, it was 13 seconds.
13 seconds?
Yeah.
Oh.
And that's what it says on Wikipedia. It said your first fight was like, the first win was 7 seconds over Jason Garoux.
No, wow. it was like a minute. I think it was a couple minutes,
it
maybe
says
2:30.
7 seconds.
It was not 7 seconds.
Oh, all right.
I wish it was 7 seconds, but no.
Have you ever heard of a 4-second knockout?
It's pretty insane. I mean, it's like one step, boom,
one
knockout.
Step, boom, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was like we touched. I even asked my coach. Like, I was like, "Did we touch gloves?" Because like that would have been messed up if I didn't touch gloves.
You touched your glove on his face.
yeah, definitely. I was like, "What?" And then so, it happened. He fell. I just saw his head hit the canvas, and I just
damn,
took advantage
dude.
Of it, man. So.
Is there a video of this?
Of the 4-second knockout?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's on YouTube. Just look up Tough Enough 4-second knockout.
All right. Now, that was an amateur. Now, is this your first pro fight or your second pro fight?
This is my second pro fight. My first pro fight, I actually had a 30-second knockout.
Yeah, I saw that. That was in New York, right?
Yeah. No, that was in Richmond, Virginia. And it was a good experience, a good first fight, you know, to get the jitters out. And it was actually in front of Dustin Poirier, too. And I'm a big fan of him, too, as well. So that was pretty cool.
Nice.
And
Now, where are you training now in Vegas?
I'm training. I'm training at 4 different gyms. I train at Pound for Pound Boxing for my boxing. I train at Extreme Couture for my wrestling, my MMA-based sparring, my MMA-based wrestling, kickboxing, all that. And then I train at Cobra Kai Las Vegas with Tim Go. And he's a black belt under. So I'm in my backyard.
Sim's the man.
He's a black belt under. Yeah, Sim. He's a black belt under Mark Lehman, which
yes.
I don't know if you know. He's Johnny Hendricks. Johnny Hendricks' main coach right now. But I don't know their situation right now. But right. And then as far as my conditioning, my strength conditioning, I'm at Omaza Fitness, which is one of the top strength conditioning places out here in Vegas.
Now, you're from Guam, down. Right?
I am from Guam.
Now, you might be the smallest guy from Guam. I've been to Guam. It's all like it's all Samoans over there. These people are the biggest people I've ever seen in my life.
For real? You've been to Guam?
I've been to Guam. I did comedy for the military in Guam. And I went to six strip clubs in one night. I went to the G-Spot. You ever go to the G-Spot?
I've never been to the G-Spot, but you know what? I'm going to go there next time.
It was great. I actually gave a girl a lap dance in the VIP room.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was good times.
And then I went
home with her and didn't get laid.
That's sad.
It was very sad. Now this being a press conference, why are you going to beat Jose Torres?
My mind, I believe my skill, I give it to him. He is experienced. He has a lot of, experience, with his amateur background. I know he wants some road titles, but I've been doing this since I was 12, man. I've been competing in jiu-jitsu since I was 12. I used to go to California all the time to do these pancreation tournaments, and that was held in San Diego, and I won that like six times. And then when I finally turned 18, because in the state of Nevada, you have to be 18 to fight MMA, and then I did there. So I feel like even though he has experience, I feel like there's a lot of things that I've seen in MMA over the years. I train with the likes of a lot of people, and I feel like his experience doesn't really scare me, and I just feel like my mind will overcome everything. I feel like I won't break.
Jose?
I push myself to those limits.
Jose, how would you like to respond to that, Jose?
Yeah, I know. Ian's definitely a great fighter. I've seen his film. I definitely respect the guy. One thing that I do have on him is the experience. He's been fighting since he was 12, even though, not to one up a guy, but I've been fighting since I was 4 years old and been doing martial arts, wrestling, and so on for so long. The biggest thing that I have on him is the experience of 25 fights or 26 fights. And it wasn't just local fights in Chicago. It's, Illinois, Missouri, Vegas are tough enough a couple times. And then the world championships, the national championships, and taking golds in Brazil for kickbox and Pan American Games and Czech Republic as well. So I wasn't just doing local things. I faced people with legit credentials that I knew could be places somewhere. So I'm definitely excited for the fight. He's definitely a good fighter, mainly with that 4 second knockout. Congratulations with that. And it's going to be a good go. I believe I'm going to win through experience, even though he has.
This is a very heated press conference right now. I could tell. I could feel the tension in the air right now. Now, Ian, where are you better than Jose?
I would definitely have to either say my jiu-jitsu or my stand-up. But as far, it's one of those things where I have to fight him first to see, and. Mm. But I feel as far as like looking on tape and everything, I feel my stand up would be a little better, and my jiu-jitsu, I've been doing jiu-jitsu since I was 12, and my brother, he's actually a national, champion in boxing. He's ranked number 3 in the nation. So I, over the years of just being around him, I've learned a lot about the sport of boxing and also I won a couple of titles in kickboxing too. I used to fight for Master Titles and I went around with him and won some titles with him. I was actually going to compete in 2011 or 2010 for the Road Muay Thai, tournament, that Road Amateur Muay Thai tournament in Thailand. But, unfortunately I got hurt.
Well, this is way too professional. Jose, where are you better than Ian? Yeah.
I believe for sure my strength will be wrestling just because of my college background. I would probably give him the stand-up because of his length and because of his power, but I'm the smaller guy. I believe I'm faster. I'll be able to get in, take him down, and keep him down.
We have Sage Northcutt here.
My back intro.
Sage Northcutt just showed up to the press conference. Sage, what are your thoughts on this press conference so far?
They're way too nice, man. I don't know.
Nice. I can't do a Sage Northcutt impersonation. What am I?
I saw you do it on YouTube.
This is definitely my thing. We all have the same goal. It just happens that we're all in each other's way.
Okay. Who gets hotter chicks between you two? Between Ian and Jose?
I don't know. I no offense, Jose, but I gotta give I probably gotta give me the advantage on that one, man, because I live in Vegas. I don't know how Chicago is over there, but I don't know.
Wow.
I see some hot chicks in Vegas.
He does have a big HIV
HIV. Uh-oh.
H is a motherfucker. That's what I call it.
I don't know, man. I don't mess with those girls. I don't go that far on the strip.
All right, Jose. Jose, I know you have a fiance now, but before then, did you get more pussy than Ian?
I'm not gonna lie. No, I was really focused on college and graduating, man. That's all I did. Sadly, you know, I was definitely focused on college and just getting my degree, which I did, and you know, just. Now I'm turning pro, so I was just focused on one thing, and my fiance was always there by my side helping me out.
No. All right. Listen, guys, you guys are both awesome. I can't wait for this fight. Honestly, you guys are going to have great careers. I mean, just your resumes alone. You should just go there and just give each other their resumes and just compare resumes. Kenny, anything you want to say about this fight?
Nothing, man. You guys, good luck. Get after it. Entertain. And, you know, I'm sure you guys will do your talking in the cage. That's what they're about.
Right. Talking in the cage. Tyler?
Yes, yeah. A beef this big can only be settled with the fist. So
that's right.
I can't wait to see.
By the way, there's a thing called Tip a Fighter, right, where the fans will tip you guys for your fighting and throw money your way. So if you guys should join Tip a Fighter, a lot of the Titan guys are doing it, and you can make more money that way. So,
thank you, man. That's a good looking out, man. Thank you.
Absolutely. Now, where can people find you guys?
You can find me at Ian Lujan.
Yeah,
I got it. You can find me on Ian Lujan, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
And Jose?
And then, if you can get a hold of me on Twitter. If you can get a hold of me on Twitter.
And Jose?
And then for me, Twitter is ShortyTours125. Facebook fan page, Jose Shorty Torres MMA, and Instagram, Jose Shorty Torres.
Well, good luck, guys, and I'll be watching December 18th.
Thank you, man. Hey, Jose, you know, thank you, guys. Jose, I appreciate, man. It's an honor to go in there in the ring with you, man. Thank you. And I appreciate MMA Roasting, man. Thank you, guys.
No problem, man.
It's an honor. You guys are all legends.
Oh, thank you, guys. Take care. Thank you, guys. All right, they're now dating.
All right.
Okay. All right, so... That was another really heated press conference between these two guys.
Woo!
Wow.
Those guys know how to sell a fight. Jesus Christ. The last time we had Anthony Gutierrez and the guy he's fighting, Andrew. Were you up for that?
Yeah.
It was Andrew, what was his name? And they went crazy on each other. Mm-hmm. Like, they were just going fucking nuts.
Really?
Yeah, Andrew Yates.
Yeah.
Did you get them going more? Like, there were certain.
Yeah.
Hanata Laranja was here. He said something about one of the guy's girlfriends, and the other guy thought it was his opponent.
Yeah.
And then he went nuts.
He went nuts.
That's amazing.
Yeah, these things get to go really well. But look, I mean, these guys obviously they have a. Is there a something wrong with having too much amateur experience? Like. Could that happen?
Well, in some ways, I think it could be disadvantageous if, like, you're getting hit a lot. You know what I mean? If you have, like, too many fights. There is such thing as too many fights, for sure. But I don't think there's a such thing as maybe having too much experience, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, so
it gives you the experience without it affecting your pro record. I wish I had fights prior to me being on The Ultimate Fighter. I had, like, I went... pro like right off my first bat. I only had like four fights, and you know you're gonna make your mistakes early on in your career, so make your mistakes in your amateur record, not on your pro record.
Now some of your fights, I watched your Lozon fight last night. That was a great fight.
That was
tough. Joe's still in there.
He's
still throwing down. What fight do you think are you the most proud of, and what do you wish you could do it again?
You know, the Gomi fight was cool just because that was the guy that I always looked up to and always wanted to fight, even like as I was just getting in there.
You killed him.
It was all right. I think I fought him maybe at the right time or whatever. But that was a fun fight because that was a guy I always wanted to fight. And then the fight that I wish I could do it again, probably like Gray. I mean, all of them. Every loss I've had.
Every loss you've had?
I always feel like, yeah.
You mentioned earlier with the Aldo fight, you said that was like the toughest cut. I wanted to ask you, what's like the craziest fight that you ever went into as far as like where you felt like bad cut or you went in injured or like?
I think the scariest one was when I fought Roger Huerta. Uh-huh. I was super sick heading to that fight and had some stomach issues right before that fight. And
Chlamydia?
Yeah.
Really?
Really bad chlamydia. No, wow. I had, dude, I like my stomach, I was throwing up. I had diarrhea. It was not a good scene. And I remember just being like, please just let me get through the first round. And it was a heated fight. It was a very important fight. Obviously, Roger Huerta, he was undefeated.
He was kind of a big thing in the UFC. What happened to that guy? Did you take his soul?
I guess. I don't know. You know, it was such an important fight for me to win that. Like, I wanted to win that so bad, and I was so sick. And I remember just being like, just let me go 5 minutes. Just I can't lose in the first round.
Did it bother you? He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Did that fuel you a little bit?
No, not really. So when we were doing our PR tour, the PR person that was with us with the UFC had gotten off from the table, and it was just Roger and I. And Roger sat down and kind of very confidently, I'd say cocky, looked over to me and he goes, "Man, I'm renegotiating my contract with the UFC, so sorry, I'm gonna have to hurt you when we fight."
And he put
his hand out to shake my hand, like, "Hey, man, sorry, I have to kick your ass. You know, I'm negotiating with the UFC, and I got to prove that I'm the best." So I just laughed and I just shook his hand. I was like, "Yeah, man, you got to do what you got to do." So for me, in my head, that was the little seed that he planted where I was like, "I will not lose this individual."
You should have, like, if you didn't feel well, you should have been like, and then give
exactly,
like,
exactly.
Now, one of your fights, I don't know which one it was. It was after you fought, you went, "We finished fights at 155. Like you turned
to
the Hulk.
It was after Alvin Robinson.
It was a great judoka, right?
Yeah, he was a good wrestler, actually.
Good wrestler,
jiu-jitsu guy. And it was right after my fight it was one of the first fights after I fought Sean Cherk. I fought Mishima, and then I fought, like, Alvin Robinson. And Sean Cherk had fought that day as well, and it was a really boring five-round fight. And I actually went on, I think, after the main event or something crazy. I think it was after Anderson Silva beat Nathan Marquardt. And I was just, like, pissed because I was waiting all day. I went on last, and it was, like, the only one of the few times in the UFC where there was a fight that happened after the main event. And I was so pissed off, and I was just like, "If you guys want to see fights finished, blah, blah, blah." So I didn't sound like the Hulk. It was more like, "I finished fights.
No way, man.
If you want to see fights finished at 155.
Fuck that. It sounded pretty cool,
I sounded like Mickey Mouse, dude.
I was like, this dude.
No, I remember that.
This dude wants to finish fights. Do you ever, like, after you're banging Clark, you go, "I finished Clark." do you ever do that or no? I would do that.
I haven't done that yet. No.
You should do that.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea.
He might look at you like, "What the fuck are you doing?"
Exactly.
"Why are you yelling?"
And that was the last time I saw my wife.
"I've been a supermodel, motherfucker."
God.
I would do that. That'd be amazing.
Maybe.
Now, the Shirk fight, right? Was the blood coming from you or him?
Him, dude. I cut him with an elbow.
Razor sharp elbow.
It was insane. I must have drank a good amount of blood. And it was actually the next day. So I had taken like two showers. I took one right after the fight at the arena, and I took another one when I got to my room. And the next day I found blood, like, crusted up in my eyelid. I found it inside my ear.
Did you drink so much blood that you tested positive for steroids?
Yeah, I actually felt like I had like a hard on. I felt very muscular for like a couple days, but then it wore off once Sean Cherk's blood got out of me.
Sean Cherk, man, there's a guy that, like, he at one point was looking like one of the best of all time, and then he just disappeared.
Yeah, one of the best all-time bodybuilders of all
time. Yeah, yeah,
like,
that was ridiculous.
Yeah, I think he had a lot of injuries, and, you know, I think he was in a time... Who knows? But...
Who knows?
Speculation would indicate that he was on some good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, what do you think about that? I mean, a lot of guys say that it's an advantage. Some guys say, well, they usually mentally they are weak because they're taking stuff.
Right.
I would
say it's absolutely an advantage. You know, if I could train, if I could put more hours in than you, that's the huge advantage, I think, with performance enhancing drugs, is that if you're training 4 hours a day, right, that's a good amount. If I'm training 8 hours a day and you start accumulating that over a week, 2 weeks, a month, several months, a couple years, how many more hours of training did I get in than you?
A lot more.
Hell of a lot more.
Yeah.
So, and my recovery is better than you now. And now my rest is better than you. And now mentally I feel like a beast because I know I put that
work
in. A lot
of those guys over from Japan who came over, they haven't had the same careers they were having in the U.S.
Definitely. And then you take that away, and now mentally now they're like, oh shit, I didn't feel that same way. I don't feel that same aggression maybe. I don't know. But I think it's absolutely a huge, huge advantage. You know, and it's great that now in the UFC they have random testing. I think it's going to be a big difference.
Hey, before we talk to Ray Borg, I want to thank our sponsors, D-Cypher, D-I-Cypher. It's the lifestyle firm. It's a lifestyle firm designed to help you reach your full potential through personal coaching. Everyone needs a personal coach, and everyone can benefit from feedback and outside perspective. So call today at 1-888-731-COACH and book your free coaching session. That's 1-888-731-2622. If you sign up and use the code ROASTED, you get 10% off. Also, American Icon Autographs, AIASE.com, the best sports and celebrity memorabilia and events. Past signings have included Fedor, Sakuraba, Rampage, Big Nog, Hoist Gracie, Marlus Conan, and more. AIASE.com. The guy's name is Sean. He is a great, great guy. Also, tip a fighter. Listen. Fighters are getting screwed left and right. We were just talking over the break over some of these fights. Fighters, like a guy like, you know, these guys go from being on The Ultimate Fighter, losing a couple fights. Now they're in kind of regional fights. These fighters need money, all right? So now this is a new company Bubba Jenkins started where we could actually pay these fighters, give them some more money, make them happier. Trust me, I do comedy. I sell merchandise after a show. There are so many times people just hand me a 50 or hand me $100. I'm like, shit, thank you. Thank you very much. That's awesome. So we can do the same for fighters. Now, a fighter that we are calling right now is this guy, Ray Borg. He's 9-1, ranked number 13 in the world, and he's a pretty badass fighter. He's out of Albuquerque, but he's not at Greg Jackson's. He's at a different one, and he says that the guys at his gym are better than the guys at Greg Jackson's, which is kind of a weird statement considering they have John Jones and some other champions, but fuck it. I like his confidence. Let's talk to Ray Borg right now.
Hello?
Hey, Ray Borg.
Hey, how's it going?
How's it going? You're on the MMA Roasted Podcast. It's me, Kenny Florian, as well as Tyler Bowe. How are you, man?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for asking.
Thank you for coming on the show. You're 9-1. Your first fight in the UFC, you took on 15 days notice against Dustin Ortiz, I actually thought you won that fight. I think Kenny was calling that fight, right?
Yeah.
I think you thought he won also.
Yeah. He's Ray, I just got to say, man, I'm a big fan of your work, dude. I love the way you fight, your nonstop action. And I guess just for me, my own curiosity, where does that mentality come from? Because it seems like you're seeking that finish, man.
By the way, thanks, man. I appreciate the love and support. Big fan of yours too. But I don't know. I just kind of have this thing inside me to where I don't really like to go three rounds. I mean, I can very easily if I have to, but I like to just go in there, make my money, and then go home. And it's just like a thing I've developed from like a very, very young age to where I'm just always eager for that finish and eager to put on an exciting fight.
You don't get paid by the minute.
Now, I was actually reading about you yesterday while I was taking a dump.
That's very sweet, Adam.
No yeah. problem. I had my Fighters Only magazine, and they had a whole spread about you. And I was like, I was actually learning some cool stuff about you. First of all, you started MMA because you were 15 years old, and there was no wrestling team, right? And you were like, I want to wrestle, and there's no team in my school?
Yeah, pretty much. I went to like a really small hillbilly school with like 15. I graduated with like 15 kids, and they barely had enough for six-man football, much less a full wrestling team.
Where was this?
This was in San Juan, New Mexico. It's like on the border of New Mexico and Texas.
So there were 16 kids in your school?
No, 16 kids that I graduated
with. Oh, wow.
Kindergarten through 12th grade, there was 200 kids.
Wow, this is some school. So there was no wrestling team. How many kids were in your? How many people were in your town?
Well, the town of San Juan, I don't even think you can call it a town. It's like a village, but I'm not sure what the population there was. But I actually lived in a town about 20 minutes away called Tucumcari, New Mexico, and I just went to school in San Juan because it was a better school system than the school that was in Tucumcari.
Now, they call you the Taz Mexican Devil. The tax, they call you the Taz Mexican Devil, which I think is probably the greatest nickname. The Taz Mexican.
Yeah, I love it.
Now, I had also read while taking a dump that you were you were homeless for a while. You were living on couches.
Yeah, before I had bought Nick Urso on the Legacy card, I kind of gave up having a job or anything like that to train full time as a full time pro fighter. And, you know, unfortunately, there's not a whole lot of money before you're in the UFC. So, yeah, I was living on pretty much from couch to couch, and all my teammates would let me stay with them and stuff. So it was, you know, it was rough.
Now, this fight against Nick Urso, you had said that Nick Urso is this big guy over at Jackson's camp. They were putting a lot of hype behind him. You belong to the other gym, right? There's another gym in Albuquerque that you. It's kind of like the. Is it kind of like how in Dodgeball, that movie Dodgeball, they have like Jackson's is like Ben Stiller's gym,
Globo at, gym,
the Globo
are you,
gym.
Are you calling us Average Joe's gym?
Yeah. Is that how it is? Kind of in Albuquerque, you belong to Average Joe's.
We are very much Average Joe's gym. Yes.
Nobody makes me bleed my own blood, Ray. No.
So now, but you had beat Nick Urso, and that was a big upset, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, for people and people in the New Mexico scene knew that it wasn't going to be an upset, but apparently to everybody at Jackson's MMA, it was a huge upset. Everyone thought Nick Urso was just going to run through me, but you know that's not how it happened.
You beat him in the second round, right? I mean, you tapped him.
Yeah, I submitted him in the second round.
So you submit Nick Urso, and then the night, then like 30 seconds later, you get the call to be in the UFC?
Yeah, well, it was like 15 minutes. Well, my coach had told me after the fight, he goes, hey, I didn't want to tell you this before the fight because I don't want your mind to be off and stuff, but Sean Shelby had called before the fight and had asked if you were a free agent. And my coach Tom Vaughn told him yes. And right after he told me that, I went and said hi to my family. And about 15 minutes later, when I go to the back to get the rest of my stuff, he tells me, hey, Sean Shelby just called and asked if he wanted to fight Dustin Ortiz in 2 weeks.
That's
so,
awesome.
You know, like it was a crazy amount of emotions. I cried and then I was like, hell yeah, let's do it.
Nice, nice, nice. And then you pretty much won that fight. Even by getting the loss, you still, I think, showed everyone, like, who the hell is this guy? You've won your last three or four fights. Your last fight against Chris Kalaitis, you finished a Kimura from half guard, which I think is, like, pretty rare, right?
It can be tough to finish from there, but Ray's not your average grappler at all, man, dude. Yeah, like, first of all, what's so impressive about Ray is, you know, not only his grappling, but it's his ability to just never stop. Like, you don't stop moving, dude. You are always trying to advance your position. And, you know, as far as your rear naked choke, I think it's maybe one of the best in the UFC.
Yeah, I feel like I present a very different style of grappling than anybody. A lot of people were telling me that, you know, that as far as my nickname, if I was a bigger person, you know, I'm not much of like a superhero kind of guy or like Marvel and stuff, but they told me my nickname should be the Juggernaut for a while because, like, I guess the Juggernaut, once he gets momentum going, you know, there's no stopping him. And that's the same thing as my grappling style is once I build up some momentum and I start to open up these scrambles and I start, you know, moving on people, then it's just nonstop. And that Kimura from half guard actually sucked for me because that split, I'm not as flexible as what I used to be when I was younger, when I was like 15. So I knew that it was close to the end of the fight. I was like, you know what? Those $50,000 bonuses are pretty cool. I'm going to try and get one at the last minute.
Ray, who's been the guy that really has been your mentor as far as your jiu-jitsu or grappling game?
Well, right now it's Tom Vaughn. He's my jiu-jitsu coach. He's, you know, very, very, a very good jiu-jitsu coach. But where I got my style from is in Tukum Terry, I trained with this guy named Abel Colum. Abel Colum, you know, he's been known. He fought in Dream. He fought Wilson Heath for like the first Izzy-Dex belt. And I got my grappling ability and style from him.
We talked about him on the show before. They said that I forgot who it was. Said that Abel Colum was on their flight, and he had like a cowboy hat and like a big, he's like from Alaska or something, or and he goes around going, "I'm Abel Cullum" to everyone on like the airplane. He was telling everyone that his name was Abel Cullum, right? Right?
He does wear a cowboy hat, but I had no clue that he did that.
But he said, it, I forgot who it was. They said he was like the nicest guy ever. That he was going around telling everyone his name is Abel Cullum on like the airplane, introducing himself to everybody on the flight. They were saying how they were saying how nice of a guy he was.
I wouldn't doubt that.
Now, now they always say when you're fighting that you're so good at getting people's backs. Now, when you're hooking up with chicks, are you just the man at anal because you're so good at getting behind them and just slipping it in?
No, I guess so. I mean, I've never.
You can always tell Adam to shut the hell up if you want.
Or I've never taken jujitsu off the mat. I imagine if, you know, if it came to that point in the bedroom, I would, more my instincts would take over and I'd think in a rear naked choke, I guess you could say.
Okay, all right. Okay, that's not good. Then maybe it's that's good. I'm just saying it would seem like you'd be a natural for doggy style because you're able to get people's backs so quickly and just kind of like they wouldn't even know what's going on. And, you know, and who knows? It's probably very enjoyable for the girls you're with. Do you have a girlfriend or no?
Yeah, I do.
Now, how long have you had a girlfriend for?
2 years.
Nice. And did you meet her at Average Joe's?
I did meet her at Average Joe's.
Nice. That's what you guys always say. The guys in the show, they go, yeah, I was helping some girl train. Next thing you know, if I have a girlfriend, she's never joining a jiu-jitsu gym because it seems like you guys are fucking savages, right? How did this happen?
We ended up talking. I was Facebook creeping on her. You know, the good old fashioned Facebook creep, and then we talked about fighting a lot because she was originally from like a small gym here in Albuquerque, and then she had told me that she wanted to be a, you know, professional fighter someday, so she started training at our gym.
Right. Now you said that your gym is better than Jackson's gym.
I don't remember saying that, but yeah, I'll go ahead and say it now. Yeah.
No. That you said that you guys match up a pound for pound. Now, how is that possible though? Because I mean, they have John Jones there. They have all these guys in the UFC there. I mean, I know you're in the UFC.
The way I see it is, the reason why I think we, like, I guess you could say pound for pound beat Jackson is because, you know, Jackson has all these superstars and all that, but only like three of them are actually from Albuquerque. I guess you could say that's why we're, you know, we can be considered as average Joe's gym is because everybody at our gym is your typical, you know, Albuquerque hood type person. Everybody comes to fight. So I feel like Jackson just kind of has all these, you know, immigrated superstars who were already someone before they came to Jackson's. And then everyone's hyping them up to be, you know, Albuquerque
right.
representing and stuff like that.
That makes sense. Kenny, do you understand what he's saying?
Yes.
You trained at Jackson's, right?
I've never been at Jackson's. Never seen. But obviously, you know, both gyms are very impressive, man. Tom Vaughn and what he's done with all his guys. You know, Carlos Condit used to train with Tom Vaughn for a little while. There have been a bunch of guys that I've worked with Tom Vaughn. And he's one of those guys that doesn't say very much, but in the corner, you know that whatever he says, he means, and it's very important. And, you know, obviously, you look at guys like Ray Borg, he's done an unbelievable job.
So, Ray, who do you want to fight? Go on.
I'm sorry.
Go on.
I was just going to say that, Tom Vaughn's an excellent coach, and he is one person who wears a fanny pack that you probably don't want to mess with.
Yeah. Do not make fun of the fanny pack. Yeah.
Now, Ray, who do you want to fight next, Ray?
I want to fight anybody in the top 10 who's going to move me forward. I'm really game to fight anybody. If I had to call out a specific name, it'd probably be like Wilson Heath or John Moraga. Those are two fun fights for me.
Right. So you're going to beat those guys. Why? Let's talk some major shit so we can get some hits on this podcast.
I see myself beating any of them because Wilson Heath has a glass jaw. So all you kind of have to do is just, you know, just whisper to him and he'll probably be unconscious. John Moraga is just like your average basic fighter who just likes to throw everything behind every punch. And I feel like just him being so basic, I'll just completely destroy him.
I love it. I love this. I love this kid's confidence, man. And he backs it up. You got a hot chick. You're on fire, man. Now, are you able to sustain your living through fighting now, or do you have to work a part-time job?
No, I that's one of the nice benefits of being in the UFC is now I can just focus completely on training in my career and not have to have a side job in order to support myself.
Nice. Well, listen, Ray, it was an honor to have you on the show. I'm a big fan. Keep up the great work. Thanks, man. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks, man. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Take care. All right, that was Ray Bourque. I like that kid.
He's a confident dude, man, and I really do love watching him fight, man. He's nonstop. You know, for a guy who comes from a grappling-based kind of style of mixed martial arts, he's one of those guys that he'll never disappoint. You know, he gets the fight to the mat, and he's never stopping. He's just looking for that submission every single time.
I feel like there's guys that approach this as a sport, and there's guys that approach this as a fight.
Right.
And I mean, they're both, I mean, you're, I would say, definitely a strategist, you're an intelligent fighter, but you also, you're a gamer. But there are those guys that just come in like it's a fight. Like right. I feel like the Diaz brothers, those dudes, like if you said, like, do they approach it as a sport? They'd be like, fuck no,
it's
man.
It's a lifestyle
right.
for them.
Right.
Who do you like, by the way, Nate Diaz or Michael Johnson?
You know, this is a tough one, man. Both guys are awesome. I think here's the problem. Nate Diaz, as good and as tough as he is, and he still might win this fight, I just think that Michael Johnson has a little bit more tools on the feet.
He's evolved more.
I think Nate Diaz is way better on the mat than Michael Johnson is. I just think Michael Johnson's a better striker as it is right now because of his utilization of footwork and kicks. And Nate Diaz, both Diaz brothers, they haven't thrown as many kicks, and I think if they did integrate more kicks, their game would be so much better. They'd be so much more dangerous. Now, Nate might go in there and start throwing kicks, and you might be a new Nate Diaz, but from the typical Nate Diaz that we've seen, you know, he tends to rely mostly on his hands, and his hands are freaking good. They're very, very good. He's got a long-ass reach for the division, which is going to give Michael some problems. I just think that if in this game, if you're not getting better, you're getting worse.
Wow. That's true. In every game.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people go, do you think Ronda, like I was one of the guys who called the fight with Ronda. I said, this girl's good, Holly. And I knew I had inside information on how bad Ronda's camp was going and all the distractions.
Yeah,
so it was like,
I heard, yeah.
That was to me, it was like kind of a, not a no brainer, but I was like, okay, this is the stars are aligning. And now looking back in hindsight, having that horrible game plan of trying to box with right. a world champion boxer.
Right.
Now, everyone keeps asking me, what do you think is going to happen? Do you think there'll be a rematch? I think Ronda could win a rematch if she leaves GFC, goes to a Jackson's, yeah. or, well, she won't go to a Jackson's, but if she goes to a you know, TriStar, right. or even an AKA, or, sorry, you know, American Top Team.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on all this?
I don't know. I did hear the same thing, that she did have a very tough camp, that there were a lot of distractions, a lot of things going on. I don't know how she is trained. I have spoken with Edmund Tarverdian. I think he's a smart guy. I think he's a good striking coach. But for MMA, it's different. And I think that I don't know exactly what the deal is with her. I do know that there are a lot of things that you need to do to prepare for a mixed martial arts fight. And you can't just go in there and get boxing training and just do judo or takedowns and expect to go out there and win at a high level these days. That's old school training. And for Ronda, she's a phenomenal athlete. She has a lot of things going on. And I think that perhaps with all the information that she got, with everyone saying, you know, that like, oh, you're the best, and everyone tells you that repeatedly, you start to kind of maybe believe that. And maybe she became a victim of her own kind of fame. Yeah, exactly. And I had a family that always told me I sucked, so it was great. They kept me in check all the time. So I was always, you know, in check with reality. But, you know, that's the thing. You never believe how bad you are. You never believe how good you are. And that's the thing.
What would your advice be for her? Like, Kenny Florian is now...
She needs to work footwork. I would have her work with footwork for maybe 8 months straight
before
she took
legs?
Another fight. Double legs too, for sure. But also, you got to be able to cut off the cage. And she wasn't placing her feet in the right way. She wasn't moving her feet in the right way. She wasn't cutting off the cage in the right way. Ronda has, she's blessed with natural power. She hits hard. You know what I mean? And I think at one point she kind of rocked Holly with one of the shots. I think that the difference really more than anything else was the footwork of Holly Holm. Everyone talks about the hands and the boxing. Shut up. You don't know what you're talking about. It was the footwork that's the difference. If you have shitty footwork, you're not going to lay your hands on anybody. You can have the best hands in the world. If you don't have good feet, you don't have good distance control, if you don't have proper understanding of range, you're never going to hit anybody. And that was the difference. I mean, Ronda looks great in pads, but when you're standing still and hitting pads, anyone can look good. And I think for Ronda, you know, I think she wasn't evolving as much as she should have. And the other thing is everyone looked at Holly's first two fights in the UFC and she didn't look good. That's the reality. You can only judge a fighter on what you've seen. And Holly didn't look great in those first two fights.
Although,
and
I was at the second one. Were you there? Yeah. Did you call the second one?
I called the second one, yeah.
I thought that she looked better in the second one than she did against Raquel. Yeah. But I also think that she does enough to win.
Right.
Or even if she doesn't look great, she doesn't have that factor of I have to impress. And that's I think is a benefit for fighters sometimes because they don't feel like they don't do big stupid moves, put themselves in shitty situations.
Right, but you know at the same time, like if you're going to decision, and no offense to Raquel Pennington, but if you're going to decision against Raquel Pennington and it was a close fight, and now you're fighting Ronda Rousey who has been taking women out left and right in under a minute, it's kind of hard to predict that you're going to beat Ronda Rousey and that you're going to knock out Ronda Rousey. Right. So prior to her coming in, we were all hearing this was the girl that maybe could beat Ronda. And I was very excited. And I saw the first fight and go, okay, maybe she was just nervous. And then the second fight I saw, I was like, I don't know. I don't know if she had it mentally. Obviously, we were all wrong, or I was wrong anyway.
Now,
and Holly's a beast. And I don't think...
Would you recommend that Ronda leaves that camp?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I don't know how Edmund trains Ronda. I really don't. I don't know enough information about that.
But based on Shayna Baszler going 0-2,
right?
Jessamyn Duke going 0-2, Travis Brown going 1-1, Manny Gambarian winning a fight but looking like almost losing that one fight, and now Ronda.
Right.
I mean, based on that, would you say, you know what, maybe it's time to mix it up?
It might be time for her to mix it up. And I like Edmund, and it's a hard thing to say, but it looked like she didn't do the proper preparation to fight a southpaw. And with those other people who are involved with the camp, they haven't had the best showing. So I don't know. I think that mixed martial arts is always evolving. And if you're not doing the latest kind of things, the latest technology, you're not up to par with what's going on out there in today's MMA, you're going to be left behind pretty quickly.
You could have been a lawyer. You know that, right? You would have been a great lawyer. Like.
Yeah, that's a, you know, I was going to go that
politician,
route.
Politician, you think I'd become a politician?
Who knows? Maybe I'll be president someday.
I vote for you. I vote for Vote.
Thank you. Vote for Flo.
That said, how do you think the game has changed since you've left, or since you haven't been fighting?
Oh, it's been huge. I think that, first of all, the training methods have changed a tremendous amount. The way that people prepare needs to be different. It's changing, you know, I feel like it should be changing every kind of 6 months. People need to be integrating new things because I think even integrating old techniques, we're seeing that now. People are kind of recycling moves. You're seeing guys that now come from, we're seeing capoeira, which was considered, you know, totally useless in mixed martial arts. Now you see Conor McGregor using capoeira techniques and guys doing cartwheel kicks. Who would have thrown a cartwheel kick back in 1993? No one. They would be like, that's useless.
Shoney
but
Carter.
Now, so these techniques that you're not prepared for are becoming extremely dangerous and useful because guys are believing in them and they're integrating into their overall mixed martial arts style and game. And you have to be constantly upgrading your technology all the time, doing new weapons. If you're still out there shooting bows and arrows and the other dude's got a 45, you're in trouble, man.
But how do you? But what do you think about like if it ain't broke, don't fix it? I mean, a double leg's a double leg, and a jab and a cross is always going to be an effective tool if it's used.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Look at Hoist Gracie.
Yeah, and here's the other thing. If I have a machine gun and I got the best damn machine gun and I'm a great shot, and I know that I'm going to meet you at 12 o'clock at this particular space and you're going to be in front of me, you're dead. But if you show up maybe at 11:58 and you're hiding around the corner and I'm looking for your ass and you come up from behind and shoot me,
I'm in trouble. So it comes down to being as sneaky as possible and mixing up your patterns. If I know, no matter how much or how good you are, if I understand the patterns of how you move and where you're going to be and what you like to do, there's a way to beat you.
You've read The Art of War, haven't you?
And the key is being completely unpredictable in the way you fight.
Yeah.
And that's the key, is being as unpredictable. You know, and there's that's what's so interesting about this Jose Aldo Conor McGregor fight, is that McGregor, unpredictable. You have no idea what the hell he's going to do next. Jose Aldo, you know exactly what he's going to do, but you can't stop it.
But do you think his leg is open for leg kicks all day?
Yeah, Conor. Yes, yeah. And he's not going to be able to block it. He's going to have to get Aldo out of there early. He's going to have to pressure him, eat those leg kicks a little bit, and make him pay for it. And it's not going to be pretty. It's eye opening, literally, when Jose Aldo hits you for the first time with his leg.
Now, John Jones is now deadlifting 600 pounds.
Right.
There's videos. I mean, he's replaced Coke with weights. He's actually, I saw him actually snorting a barbell recently. I mean, he's huge now.
He can lift so many grams.
Yes, exactly. People are saying he's going to be so much more dangerous.
Right.
But his speed was a big factor in all his fights. And I'm starting to think maybe he's going to get slower, being that he's now just becoming...
You never know. Listen, this is what Cormier is saying now.
Yeah.
And Cormier is my buddy. And listen, that would be so nice and perfect if John Jones was getting stronger, but he's getting slower. But we all know that that is not always the case. This isn't the 1980s where people don't know about how to get strong and get fast.
When have you ever seen a guy... Like even like Frank Mir.
Right.
Like when he came back after Brock.
Sure.
He kind of was embarrassed by Brock. So he came on and then he came back as this fucking different Frank Mir. But eventually, I don't know how much it really helped
him. It definitely can't affect. But we can't confuse muscle with a lack of speed. It doesn't always work out that way. And it depends on how he's training. And maybe he's just putting on weight. And maybe it's something he never did before at all. And now we're just seeing these crazy
results.
But getting
up to 240, 235.
He was never small, though. I mean, he probably walks around like 230, 235.
He was on a Coke diet, too. And that's very trimming.
You're awful.
Plus, he's black, so he looks smaller. Black is slimming. Okay, so, yeah, listen, guys. That is our podcast today. This Friday night, I will be in Fresno at the Club One Casino. And next week, next Tuesday to Sunday, I will be at the Stratosphere Hotel, LA Comedy Club, grand opening week. Come down. It's $20 admission and then all you can drink. So $20 to get in, drink as many drinks as you want. Also, thank you to Tip a Fighter. Tip a Fighter. Kenny, are you telling people about Tip a Fighter?
No, but I'll help you tell people about Tip a Fighter. Tip a Fighter.
Thank you, Kenny. I'm telling you, it's a really good thing. Fighters can make more money. Actually, a lot of the Invicta girls. The girl said she was like, it was like a slot machine. People were just throwing her money.
She was a slot machine?
No. Like
where
the money
are you going
she was getting.
It?
The money she was getting.
Oh,
it was like a slot machine.
Okay.
She wasn't a slot machine. Now, also American Icon Autographs, AIASE.com, the best sports celebrity and events. Trust me, Sean is a great guy. He sponsors a lot of fighters. Sean Jacoby, great, great guy. If you want a really cool celebrity and memorabilia and events and signings, go to him. Also, D-Cypher. It's the lifestyle firm, D-I-Cypher. Everyone needs a personal coach. Look, everyone needs a personal coach, and that's a quote from Bill Gates. I would trust what Bill Gates has to say. So, di-cypher.com. They can benefit fighters. They can help you pull the trigger, help you with octagon jitters. If you want to reach your full potential, inside or outside the cage, call D-Cypher. They help everyone. So, 1-888-731-COACH, 1-888-731-2622. Thank you, Ray Borg. Thank you, Jose Torres. Thank you, Ian. Thank you, Kenny Florian. By the way, it's such an honor to have you. I know you have so much stuff to do. Even if not, you're so busy. You just got back from Korea. You got your chick, Ian Lujan, by the way.
Yes, there you go.
So thank you for coming out and being on the show. You have no idea.
It was your pleasure.
It was my pleasure. Yes. And Tyler, where you got it coming up?
You guys can check me out on Twitter at Tyler Bow this weekend, Friday, Saturday. I'm at Junior's. Comedy Club in Valencia, California.
Nice. Thank you, Sideshow Network. Thank you, Big Sean. And take care. Bye.